Welcome to the Band Library Podcast. You can find us at bandlibrary.com, Twitter at bandlibrary, and wherever else librarians congregate. My name is S.D. Harker, librarian, writer, traveler, so-and-so, scratcher of itches. Got one on my nose right now. Just letting that little sucker build. You ever do that? You can find me on Twitter at bandwriter. I haven't quite got used to that one yet, but I kind of like it. If you want to help out the library, you can become a friend of the library over on Patreon. Patreon.com/bandlibrary. Get a lot of extra stuff. Bunch of extra episodes for $12 a year. You only got to do $1 a month, then you get access to everything. Just one little dollar. The price of a dollar cheeseburger on the dollar menu. I really stretch for that one, and I really hope you appreciate it. But just for that $1 per month, you get back episodes, almost 300 of them. Probably more than that now. Maybe over to 400. Maybe I should start saying 400 episodes. All the back bullshit. All the horrible stuff. All the normal stuff. All the writings that I do. Started doing old movies that I had never seen before, or some that I hadn't seen in a very long time. Gonna put out Gleaming the Cube as soon as I can get in front of a keyboard and have half a mind to write some stuff out. That'll be on there if you haven't seen Gleaming the Cube. I think I already talked about it a little bit on one of those Patreon episodes, but you'd only know that if you were a friend of the library. Patreon.com/bandlibrary. So enough mumbling and pumbling about all that nonsense. Today we're going to go through a book of poetry, which along with nonfiction is something I don't normally do. Why don't I do poetry and nonfiction? Well, nonfiction has its own little, area. Sometimes it's too dry. Who gives a shit? Sometimes it's just definitions, or it's somebody describing things. Sometimes it's pictures. It's just like, what's the point? I've only done a couple poetry books, because honestly, there's only been a couple poetry books that have been banned. I don't normally do poetry, because I'm not good at analyzing poetry. Symbolism, all that stuff. Getting into the meat and words, for some reason, when you give me to in prose, I'm okay. Not great. But I'm okay. But something about, the nebulousness of poetry. I enjoy reading it, I enjoy sometimes writing it, not often. Usually when I was younger, I think it, unless you have a real love of language, poetry is more of a younger person's pursuit. You think, language is all you need. Some of us need a plot. That's just me. It's not cutting down language or poetry or anything like that. But so today we're going to be covering I Saw Esau edited by Iona and Peter Opie, which I really hope I'm saying that right. Peter? No. Iona Opie, they were editors, they're folklorists. I'll get into them in a second. And it was illustrated, and there's where it really got in trouble, because a lot of his illustrations, Maurice Sendak, yeah, he did it. He did it a lot. So I'm going to talk about Iona and Peter Opie, which I think is how you say their name. I feel really bad if I don't, but I couldn't find a pronunciation guide anywhere. Who knew? Folklorists don't have pronunciation guides. So let's talk about them for a hot minute. Peter, born 1918 in Cairo, Egypt. He went to Eton College, was in the army. 1946, he wrote his own autobiography, The Case of Being a Young Man. Around World War II, though, he met this wonderful lady named Iona. She was born 1923 in Essex. She became a commander of the Order of British Empire in 1998. And they got together around 1943. They worked on their farm in Surrey, England. They produced over 30 works of children's literature, folklore. 1960, they were given the Coote Lake Medal. I think that's how you say that. Maybe Coote Lake Medal from the Folklore Society for all the work they've done. They were basically collecting all these different rhymes and folklore traditions of children to counteract the idea that because of all this television and the different media that were coming along in the you know, 1960s, the kids weren't changed in any way. They're still saying the same crazy-ass bullshit rhymes they always did. Unfortunately, like I said, she died in 2017. He died in 1982. All their works were donated to the Bodleian Library at Oxford University. I probably did say that one wrong, and well, you can tell me over on Twitter, whatever. But there were over 20,000 items that the couple had between them and all their work, worth about $500,000 total, or might have been pounds. Pretty sure I saw dollar bills, though. Currently, the British Library and the University of Sheffield have made recordings that they made available online, along with a bunch of other materials. They actually would go out and have children record all the poems and the weird little insult rhymes and different things. So that's all available online from the British Library and the University of Sheffield. Just look up Iona and Peter Opie. Now, of course, man of the hour. We've already talked about him once, or twice. Maurice Sendak, born in Brooklyn, 1928. We covered him when we covered In the Night Kitchen and Where the Wild Things Are. He loved illustrating in books as a child. He had a little bit of an illness, and that's where he got his love. He was laid up for a while. And then he went and saw Disney's Fantasia, and he was like, holy shit, drawing's the best thing ever. Got his first start doing window displays for FAO Schwartz. That was his first big job. In 1963, Where the Wild Things Are was his big breakout hit. That's what introduced him to the world. He lived with his partner for over 50 years until his partner's death, which a lot of people don't know. He was homosexual. He was gay. Great man. Unfortunately, complications of a stroke took him down in 2012, and he's passed away. RIP to all these wonderful people collecting all this information. And this actual book, we'll go ahead and get into the book itself. It opens, actually, with a history of UK publications of child rhymes. And then getting into, like, Sendak's involvement. See, they had this collected work, and nobody really wanted to publish it till they got it into Maurice Sendak's hands, and he was like, fuck yeah, I'll do all the art for this shit. In the late 80s, this is after Peter had already died, and they got it published in the American market. And this whole introduction, this is a beautiful introduction, actually, written by Iona. I don't know how you say her name. And she basically said that this book is needed because there is a need for children to laugh at silly things. That's what most of this book is. It's just silly things. It's weird little poems and asides. A lot of, you know, fuck the class struggle kind of stuff. The stuff children really care about, you know. And right off, we start with kids marching. They have a pirate flag, teacher's head up on a stick. You know, there's a kid on a stool with a noose. Like, fuck school. We don't need no education. It's that, you know, the wall. Just another brick in the wall, man. That's what this is. It's actually a pretty hardcore scene. And when we actually get to why this book was banned, or the one challenge that it has, it's the best quote ever. So skip to the end, I guess, if you really want to hear the quote. But roll with me on this. And I did actually go through. They did a lot of really neat notes in the back, like annotating all these different poems that they have in this book. So I went through and I sort of mixed in the knowledge, and I'll try to understand it. The only poems I'm actually going to read verbatim, though, there's a couple of riddles. And I'll read those when they come up, just because they're kind of fun. But yeah, mostly I'll describe what's sort of happening in the scene or what may have led to someone calling all the illustrations in this book just the most hateful nonsense they've ever read. So the second poem that struck my fancy was the title poem, I Saw Esau Kissing Kate. It's one of those kissing rhymes, you know, and up in the tree, K-S-I-S-S-I-N-G. I almost forgot I spelled kissing there for a second. Then we continue on. There's multiple rhymes about fleas, because I guess throughout recorded human history until modern, you know, medicine, we've had a flea problems. And then this poor kid starts talking about his cat. His cat's been sick. And of course is sick and vomits everywhere, and the cat licks it up before they can clean it up. because animals are gross, disgusting things. Thankfully, there's not much of a, like, the illustration doesn't come to mind of a cat vomiting everywhere and licking it up, but I'm sure it's there. Then there's one, and this is the first time that I was like, holy shit, these are actual stories I knew. And for a moment, a hot moment, before I researched, you know, who these people were that put together these books, I thought, they'd come up with these rhymes. Aren't they clever? No, they just collected them. But still, we get, it's raining, it's pouring, the old man is snoring. Went to bed with a lump in his head and he couldn't get up in the morning. Now, that's the version I know. I'm not reading that verbatim. It's just a nice little story about a old man getting some Z's. Unfortunately, went to bed with a concussion. And now he's dead. Because dead is funny. So now, most of these chapters have some type of theme running through them. Like I said, there'll be one on riddles. And now there's one on characters. There's Thomas Didymus. And it's going through about how he's tired of his wife, so he sells her. And the note says that it was a common practice, actually, to, you know, put a little collar around your wife, take her down to the market, sell her off to another dude. Yeah, I'm done with her. You know, she's got a broken tape deck. Plays the same thing all the time. Trump trading up. And this was called apparently, quote, a poor man's form of divorce, unquote. Because women were property back then. Isn't it wonderful that we've moved on from such prying times to thinking women as property and then just thinking them as sex objects? So, that's wonderful. Thank you, Mr. President. President Trump is who I'm referring to. If you're listening to this 10,000 years in the future on some weird recording, thinking what in the world we're going on here, that's about where I am in the situation. Our president's a psychotic jackass. But that's as far into politics as I'm willing to go to date this wonderful thing. So he got one kid, he's got a pan on his head. It's definitely a thing that's happening. Wrote a whole song about that. And then there's ghostesses on postesses, which I remember is a tongue twister from It, when we covered It back in the day, and I think it's in the movie that's coming out now. So I was like, oh, neat. That was an actual, like, thing that existed. And then I looked up the reason with this, you know, this ghostesses and mostesses. Apparently, it was to make fun of poor people. Country bumpkins that would say things like, well, and the postesses over there, not with a Maine accent, this is probably English, because everyone involved, except for Marie Sendak, was English that's putting this together, even some of the children that said the rhymes, they're all English. But apparently, yeah, the ghostesses on postesses, a tongue twister, is to make fun of poor people. And then, of course, there's a naked girl on a post. We get this picture, sort of. I mean, it's not like lewd or anything, but she's not washing up. Apparently, this is one of those response poems. There's a nice poem about patience being a virtue and virtue being a grace, and that you should clean your face. So somebody said, well, Grace is naked on a post, and we leave her up there, and she's not washing her clothes right. So you can go fuck yourself. Much more harder poem than you really think of. The next chapter is all about nonsense. There's, of course, the contradiction one. Then says that, you know, you must go up to go down. You must go left to go right. You must pay the man to, I don't know, get paid. Something like that. Apparently, this poem goes all the way back to 1480 to a book of verse that they found. And of course, there's naked men hanging out, kids punching parents, and other things in the illustrations. It's craziness, this nonsense. And then we get into more fun stuff. Insults, retaliations. One was collected from a kid. They were just sitting in their house and they heard outside their window some crazy little bastard talking about hitting cats or something. They were like, hold on, come back here, kid. Mother, get the microphone. Because for some reason she called Peter mother. I don't know why. Yeah, 1946, they got down this little rhyme. There's this another kid that calls this other kid an ass. Interesting way to talk to kids. And then, of course, the ultimate retaliation for any insult that you're ever thrown towards. Sticks and stones may break my bones. and they'll also break yours too, dickhead. Which I learned at like age 5, maybe 4. I don't even remember learning that. I just remember picking up my sticks and stones and going after that motherfucker. There's one about reality. How reality changes. And there's a picture of a little naked man and his penis flopping around. And she's dreaming of a husband. And he grows up, this little naked man in a top hat, and tells her a wonderful poem. Roses are red, violets are blue. I have a penis. Do you? It's a weird poem, I don't know. It's not the actual poem, of course. But that is interesting that this is included in this historic verse. And a weird one, so much that, you know, girls, basically the whole poem is about this woman who's wishing for a husband. So this little guy in a top hat shows up, all naked and shit, and then he grows up to be an adult and in a suit, not naked. Because that's what women want. Just put on some damn clothes, fool. So then, there's a poem about a room available because the previous tenants were drunks and they smoked a lot. And apparently this was very common back in the day, especially around America, Brooklyn, turn of the century. They'd put out, yeah, this guy's, we threw him out, room's for rent, because he was drinking too much gin. If he sobers up, though, you gotta move. I kind of like that one. Give yourself a chance. Grace. Next chapter's all about Grace. Not the girl from before who we didn't watch, but just something about cramming something in other things. I don't really know what this one meant. It's kind of fucked up. But now here's the point that I promised you. The one about riddles. Ready for the first riddle? There's going to be 4 of them. Number 1. It is in the rock, but not in the stone. It is in the marrow, but not in the bone. It is in the bolster, but not in the bed. It is not in the living, nor yet in the dead. I'm going to give you a couple seconds. Think that through. You can pause it here. And if you're unpausing it right now, you'll know. Or you'll know it because I'm telling you. The answer is the letter R. Rewind that. Think about it. This one, I fucking hate, but I'm going to read it to you anyway because I fucking hate it. Quote, as I was going over London Bridge, I met with a Westminster scholar. He pulled off his cap and drew off his glove and wished me a very good morrow. What was his name? You can pause it right here to think about it. Rewind. And now I'm going to tell you that the answer to this one is Andrew. Which again, I hate because of the quote, he pulled off his cap and drew off his glove. Andrew off his glove. It's like it's hidden in there, but it's not very fucking clever. Okay, if we've all gotten over that. I actually do sort of like this one, but it's old-fashioned. So think old-fashioned jokes, when you've heard 1,000 times. Quote, the land was white, the seed was black. It'll take a good scholar to riddle me that. Okay, really, like, pause this one. You're really not going to think of it, though. Because the other way to say this is, what's black and white and red all over? It's a newspaper, I assume. That was the hidden clue in the back. They actually didn't tell you the name. It's weird. So yeah, I don't really like that one either. This one I do kind of like, because this is a true riddle. It's not just some bullshit word poetry. Quote, brothers and sisters have I none, but that man's father is my father's son. I'll give you a moment. I'm actually going to read that one again. Brothers and sisters have I none, but that man's father is my father's son. Okay, you can pause it, rewind it, do whatever you got to do. And now if you've unpaused it and you're just listening on, it's a portrait of his own son that this man is looking at. Run it back. He's looking at his own son. All right, So that's all the riddles. I hope you liked it. They were just kind of fun. They were in there. I figured, you know, let's spice things up. I never ask anything of you people. Except, you know, donate to the Patreon and follow me on Twitter. B-A-N-N-E-D. Library. Band Library. Anyway, so we got some more characters. There's some chimney sweeps pushing his wife up. Sort of a relative to Peter Pumpkin Eater. Whereas his chimney sweep, Jimmy, whatever, had a wife, fucker. Well, that happens in a lot of these. There's a whole poem about a naked swimmer, or at least there's a picture of one. Apparently this poem was featured in Dorothy Sayers' Uncle Meleager's War Will. So that's just a funny footnote. Singing in the Rain fans, who you should know is my favorite musical, would remember Moses Supposes. That rhymes in here. So I kind of like that one. It's kind of clever. Someone is run over and I don't care is an actual line from one of the poems. It's also known as Patty on the Railway. Basically, it's about ethnic people building trains, getting run over as they collapse from, you know, the pain of working yourself to death. Next one's about school law, laying down the law in school. Basically, it's a bunch of poems about saying shut up or let's fight, for the most part. There's a couple of narratives, you know, little stories in here. There's a one about a kid eating until he blows up, about a guy driving to heaven, but he's got all these kids in there and he accidentally turns and goes to hell. There's one poem I really like about rain falling, about how it falls on the unjust and just alike, except mostly on the just because the unjust stole the just's umbrella. I kind of like that one. There's a butcher killing for sausage. There's one about getting peed in the eye with a lovely illustration of cats peeing on each other. And another one basically about growing up ugly. Now, as I go through, there's not too many left, but mostly for the rest of them, there's some strange ones in here. One's about killing someone's dog and cat for retribution to get back at them. There's a witch woman just at the girl's teat. There's naked people dancing in the background. There's one from the very scary stories, Everybody Dies. There's a breastfeeding baby on one illustration. Here on out, it's mostly the illustrations that I looked at because they're a little weird. But there's a breastfeeding baby who opens her mouth up, his up, the baby, until it swallows the tit. Then it swallows mom's shoulder, then her head, then the rest of her body, and then there's just a baby sitting there after eating her mom. One for the mother, two for the mother, and it goes all the way to eight for the mother. Get it? Eight. It's a counting game. On number page 78, there's a headless kid. It's fucked up. There's a poem about a kid being flushed, or at least put down the drain of his new pipe system. Of course, he's naked, showing off his penis. And this is apparently one of many rhymes about a kid named Charlie, to the point where someone in a book they found in 1902 asked, why Charlie's getting picked on so much? You know, how many assholes were named Charlie that they got this many rhymes written about them? Especially getting sent down with the bathwater and the plumbing, all naked. Next, really one, is a picture of a, I said bum. That's like down in his out hillbilly. Probably the best. But his ass is hanging out of his overalls, so that's nice. There's a nice one that's all scream. I scream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream. And then there's, I'm going to try to say it once. I'm going to go as slow as possibly can. Which for some of you, just groaned out loud, thinking I have any other speed. But here we go, and we'll see if you can say it as well. I slit a sheet I slit, a newbie slidden sheet was it. That's nice. Try to say that one again, over and over again. And as the book footnotes go on to say, it's trying to get you to say the word shit. I slit a sheet I slit. A newbie slitten sheet was it. I kind of like that one. There's all kind of different warnings. If you steal a book, you'll go to hell. You'd think these would be the ones I would write down and read, but I didn't. There's a Latin chapter and a language chapter that are all, unless I guess you're really into language and knowing all about Latin and the conjugations therein, I kind of just skipped over this one. There is one when they go through the alphabet. You know, A is for apple, that kind of shit. They do say one rhyme, P for comfort. Get it? Urinate. There's a whole one about a doctor cutting a child. This one actually comes from satirist Tom Brown. He was under the guise of the famous Dr. Fell. I don't know shit about doctor history. But Dr. Fell didn't really like him and told him, hey, I'm going to expel you unless you can say this phrase. And it basically came, the phrase basically came down to, I don't like you and you don't like me, but we can tolerate each other. On 109, page 109 that is, there's an angel flitting about with his penis showing. And there's some other rhymes about different people. There's some lamentations, which are mostly about school and kind of felt, honestly, a little anti-intellectual. Like they're advocating, yeah, be stupid. There's the roses of red, violets, or blue makes an appearance again, except shorter the skirt, the better the view. Just a little lewd. There's a dead guy faking his hanging in one poem. There's a whole bunch about Guy Fawkes. There's at least two or three in there. If you don't know who Guy Fawkes is, it's remember, the 5th of November. Something about the gunpowder plot. I forget all of it, but there you go. Watch V for Vendetta and get out of my face. There's one about contempt, making different dresses and clothes, burning liars alive. It's all there. There's one about incantations, which actually, as I was reading this, what I try to do is read the book first and then actually go into why it's banned and all that shit. So I come at it and I was like, well, of course, there's incantations here. These are literally like magic words. They're talking about animals and beasts, even one about crows killing people, which apparently crows and ravens, if you've listened to my little story over on the Friends of the Library Patreon, you know that they're all about death. That's what the note said, too. There's a couple sleeping curses in there. One that actually hopes that bugs do bite you, which I always heard the reverse. Good night, sleep tight. Don't let the bed bugs bite. Which I now realize infers that there are bed bugs everywhere, and they always have been and always will be. And then we wrap it all up with, again, school's over. It's out for summer. The immortal words of Alice Cooper. I think it's Alice Cooper. But then we jump over back to Pink Floyd. No more teacher, no more books, no more dirty looks. And that's where the book ends. Of course, then I did have to look up why it was banned. It's number 98 on the top 100 banned and challenged books from 2000 to 2009. And in 2008 in Tennessee, at the Murfreesboro Cedar Grove Elementary School, a challenger stated, and I quote, I understand it is a book of poetry, but there's a fine line between poetry, art, and porn, and this book's illustrations are absolutely offensive in every way. Unquote. I've read books for less reasons. That's an amazing one. Actually, reading through this, if you know anything about Sendak, if you read In the Night Kitchen, it's just more of that. The illustrations are charming. They're very attractive. They're nice. They fit a lot of the poems and give a little bit more levity to some of these drier poems from an olden age. Honestly, I haven't seen a book owe more to its illustrations than Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Honestly, that's a very good comparison with this. Without the illustrations, it's more of an academic tale than actually a good reading tale, although some of these would be fun to read with your kid and laugh with and all that. It's a good book for poetry altogether, but like I said, the main reason, just like Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, the scary stories were good, but those illustrations, holy shit. And that's why you should probably look at this one. Those illustrations are great. And that's where this episode will end. Thank you for listening. Stay in. Read a book.
Music, Dances and Dames by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0.